a call for Eric Turner to take his name off the ballot. Is it even possible? The Pence administration releases money for domestic violence programs, a pre-K kickoff, and the push for HIP 2.0. That plus Larry Bouchon on The Daily Show, Cuddling in Carmel, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 26, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, State Representative Eric Turner rejected a call to take his name off the November ballot. Turner's opponent, Bob Ashley, made that request. Turner is leaving the General Assembly, but not until after the election. Ashley said he feels like he's running against a ghost. If Turner wins, Republican Party leaders will name his successor. The 24-year Republican survived an ethics investigation, but is slated to lose a leadership post. If he leaves the ballot, however, it's too late for the GOP to replace him there. And so Ashley wants voters to know their options.
I think they have a better choice of voting for me rather than voting for a question mark. I think he gave the election to me. I really do. I think the election is mine to lose now, and I don't think I'm going to lose it.
Should Eric Turner's ballot status prompt a change in the law? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, Brandon Smith, State House reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Dan Parker, should there be a way to take Turner's name off the ballot?
Well, there's no way to take his name off the ballot under current Indiana law unless he moves.
Which he's not going to.
He's convicted of a crime, which I don't think he's going to be, or he takes a job with the federal government. So,
or if he would happen to die.
Well, I didn't want to bring that one up.
But that is the only other option.
That's the only other option. And so whether people like it or not, his name's going to appear on the ballot. I think this raises a lot of questions. It's going to be an interesting campaign, obviously, now. If I was Bob Ashley, I would ask Eric Turner to return all his campaign contributions and get some commitments that he's not going to campaign for.
Turner did tell Ashley that he wouldn't say anything bad about him. Ashley said he wouldn't return the favor. This is a problem, though, where you've got somebody who says, I'm going to stand for election but not serve. Should the voters be able to figure that out on their own, or should there be a change in the law?
No, there shouldn't be a change in the law. The law has worked fine for a long, long time. One of the problems you have now is there's so much unlimited early voting. Absentee ballots are already out. Some of them are already being returned. And so you've got that added problem calendar-wise that we didn't used to have because there's so much more of it today than there was before.
So as a practical matter,
it's tougher. Having special elections are very expensive, and so that's the reason in the first place that the system was set up that precinct people would make a selection in case there's a need for a replacement. And so I think the law is working, and we will see it. I agree. I think it's going to be an interesting election to see how this thing plays out. But I think most people understand what's going on and how the system works, so I don't think it's a problem.
We also know that most of the people in that district are Republican. So can a Democrat win this, even if he's running against somebody who's not going to serve?
Well, they'd have to have something pretty extraordinary going for them, and this might be it. but it's still a real tough road to hoe up there for anybody with a D next to their name.
You know, it's going to be a low turnout election, and so we never know how that's going to cut until people start going to the polls. But
You know, I think you're right, Brandon. I think if he can make that point and make it strongly, make it consistently, make it loudly, that we don't know who the Republican's going to be. It's going to be left to a limited number of people if he wins, then he's got a shot. But it's still an uphill battle. But, you know, I don't think you need to change the system. I think if he wants to make a difference, he's going to have to work that angle.
If there's laws here that need to be changed, it needs to be related to ethics in the State House and everything that led up to this point. We don't need to change election law in these rare circumstances to take care of one situation. We need to change the ethics rules in the State House to make sure that casual corruption doesn't happen.
Well, which Speaker of the House has said he would do. State Representative Ed Delaney this week proposed what he called a Turner rule that said that if you have a conflict on any issue, you shouldn't be able to play any sort of role voting on it or talking about it in committee or caucus. That's something
that seems that's a little broad. That's a tough one to do, only because if you want to keep a citizen legislature, it's tough not to have people talking about something they know about.
If they have a financial stake,
be able to talk about the law?
I mean this $2 billion deal didn't come out of nowhere.
Dan, I agree with what you're saying, but it's tough to where do you draw that line as to what that is. So if you're going to broaden this thing, where do you draw that line?
What I'm saying, this needs to be the number one priority. Obviously, after the budget next year, there needs to be a tough ethics package to get through the State House.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Eric Turner's name still be on the ballot? Your choices are A, yes, it's the law, or B, no, the law should be changed. Last week's question was, does the toll road lease still look like a good deal? 28% said yes, 56% said no, 16% said it's still too early to tell. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. More money is available this week for domestic violence shelters in Indiana. The Indiana Criminal Justice Institute announced a plan to make over $740,000 available to 43 shelters already receiving funds from the Institute. Officials say the money will help provide immediate assistance and short-term support to victims. The Institute now says funding for domestic violence programs is more than $4.2 million this year, $1.3 million more than last year. Mike McDaniel, what really happened here?
What really happened here is exactly what I said last week. The money was there at the same level that they had the year before, and what they had requested of everybody, which they're doing for all agencies, is if there are increases, we want to know how you're going to spend the money, the plan. It's called accountability. And so what's going on here is the Pence administration is trying to make people accountable for new money and how they're going to spend it.
Yet a week ago, the Pence administration was saying that the money was the same as the year before. But now they're saying it's more.
They said the same thing last week they're saying this week, and that is they get the level that they had the year before, but the additional money that the legislature appropriated for the second year is what they have to account for and how they're going to spend that money. And that's important, that we account for every dollar of taxpayer money that's out there. And that's all they asked. All they had to do was file a plan, and they get the money. And so the money was always been there.
If the issues related to the NFL weren't going on, the Pence administration would not have buckled to peer pressure
That's ridiculous.
I mean, come on.
That's silly.
You're saying they changed their position?
Yeah, absolutely they did.
Come on.
The problem, putting aside the semantics of new money and old money and what we spent last year versus what we spend this year, is the bigger problem of the timing of all this. The shelters talk about, well, yeah, you say you're going to give us the money now, but it takes forever just to get to us, and why do we have to... Why are you only asking now for plans on how we might spend this additional money? Yeah, but why are you only asking now? Why not ask at the beginning of the process so that by now we could already be getting that money?
Well, and there's the issue of truth and appropriation again. This money was appropriated for use. It wasn't until after they decided that they might want to revert that money that they made this requirement of the agencies. And so in support of what Dan is saying, other agencies that aren't involved with domestic violence or other things are not being, getting the money. It's a matter of the appropriation being whatever it is. And instead, what we've got is an understanding that a certain amount of that's going to come back in a reversion.
I think the reversions will continue to be questions. Will the Pence commitment to domestic violence programs be questioned going forward? Have they successfully dealt with this?
Well, they've dealt with the issue for the time being, but I think the question is our commitment to our surplus much greater than our commitment to domestic violence?
You got an increase of $1.5 million more than the year before. I think that speaks for itself.
Moving on, representatives from the five Indiana counties where Indiana's new pilot pre-K program will go into effect met this week. After addressing the meeting, Governor Mike Pence spoke about what the new program means for children in Indiana.
Indiana has made its first ever commitment to providing greater access to quality early learning program for some of our most disadvantaged kids.
John Ketzenberger, where will this pilot program lead?
Well, it's going to take a while before it leads anywhere, because the understanding is they won't ask for additional funding in the new budget that's coming out in January. So I think what it leads to is an understanding of what it is that they're trying to do, whether or not it makes a difference, and then if it does, they'll come back in 2017, and look for a larger appropriation.
In the next budget session, which would mean that you're not going to see any real expansion of pre-K until the fall of 2018.
I think that's right. From the state's funding perspective, I think that's absolutely right.
In the meantime, you've had a fight going on here in Indianapolis over Mayor Ballard's proposal to spend local money for pre-K programs, and the Democrats who control the City County Council have said that it's the state's responsibility, so suddenly everything in Indianapolis is on hold until 2018, it seems.
Presumably, and Governor Pence was actually asked about that, and he wisely decided not to wade into that particular fight at this point. But he acknowledged that part of the deal he made with the legislature, who was reluctant in some parts to give up this money for pre-K because they're worried about what comes next, part of the agreement was, I'm going to hold off. I'm not going to push you much further right now. And he acknowledged that getting the data from the pilot program, getting good data from the pilot program, won't take months. It will take years.
Suddenly, it seems to me that a five-county pilot is kind of small if you're looking at that long a buildup.
I don't think so, because of the counties they selected. You know, Vanderburg, Lake, and Marion are pretty big counties, for starters, so that's a big number. Second, it's called a pilot program for a reason. you try to find out whether this thing is working or not before you spend more money on it. Three, I think it's that where it's going is that once you've started down this road, I don't see how you do anything but open up in the future, and I think everybody understands that. And that's important. And I think what's important to remember here is that this thing was dead at least twice during the legislature. And Mike Pence really went to the mat on this thing, showing up in committees and doing the things you need to do to make it happen. And they're going to start early. So all but four of the five counties are going to start in January with some part of this program. So they're off to a good start. It'll only get bigger in years ahead.
You give Mike Pence points for this?
Well, it's a start. I mean, we don't really need any more data on this subject matter in terms of studying it. I mean,
Greg Ballard doesn't seem to think so.
Well, we need statewide pre-K for every child.
But where's the money come from?
Where's the money come from? Is it a priority? I mean, the question is it a priority? Can we find it? It should be. But, you know, the debate here in Indianapolis, I think, was really all about the precedent setting of using city money when it really should be a state obligation.
Well, and I think given his druthers, the governor would have that statewide expansion at this point. But the General Assembly has been hesitant to do so, and that's why you've got this compromise that we've got in place right now. But it won't be just the expansion of this program if they decide to do that. It'll be the ancillary cost of expanding to be able to take on the new kindergarten, and then it'll flow through the entire process. So we're talking about a significant chunk of change for the state if and when they expand.
And there's also the complication of the voucher program. What are the implications of opening up pre-K to every kid in the state, and how does that work with being eligible for the voucher program? You could see a dramatic expansion of the voucher mm-hmm. program under those circumstances.
Right now, it's for the pilot program or for four-year-olds from low-income families. And that's important that they understand that that's what this is to start with.
The governor's plan to expand Medicaid coverage through the Healthy Indiana plan is in limbo. That's why a group of healthcare advocates gathered at the State House this week. They urged the federal government to approve the idea that was submitted in July. HIP 2.0 could provide health insurance to 350,000 Hoosiers who currently have none. Plans called for the expansion to begin in early 2015, but that is increasingly unlikely. State Representative Charlie Brown.
I think it will get done. It's just a matter of when and how rapidly we can get it rolled out so that people can begin to have health care coverage.
And there's nothing magic about January 1. It can happen February 1 or March 1. So we'll be ready whenever it is approved.
Doug Leonard of the Indiana Hospital Association there, Brandon Smith. Will the federal government act sooner or later?
Oh, I'm trying to bet on when the federal government will act on something. That's really putting me on the spot. I think we'll have an answer before the end of the year, and I think the most likely outcome here is that the federal government approves HIP 2.0, but not just exactly as Indiana presented it. My guess is there, and Doug Leonard acknowledged that it seems like there's still work going on behind the scenes between the state and the federal government to try and find that sweet spot.
Well, and if there's a hang-up, it's likely the elements that Mike Pence likes to refer to as consumer-driven health care, co-payments and health care savings accounts. He says if they don't approve that, the state has to reconsider. He didn't say it was a deal-breaker necessarily.
Well, but it is a negotiation, and I think that's important to remember. The federal government, the state government, is trying to hammer out an agreement so that the state can say it got what it wanted and the federal government can get what it has wanted in this whole process, and that's more coverage. So I think it's at a fairly delicate stage. I think if they don't get it done, then you may see a breakdown at some point.
It seems like there's an awful lot to gain here on both sides. Both the Obama administration and the Pence administration need this.
That's always the best recipe for a compromise. what this shows is how much we should have done it right from the get-go. When you look at our uninsured rates compared to some of our neighboring states, they've benefited a lot more through the new coverage, and we should get there too. When Kentucky can lower their uninsured rate from 20% to 12, I think that we can do better than that if we just get moving. This is what happens when you put politics in front of good public policy.
And Obamacare is not going to be repealed.
This is called putting good public policy out there, and that's what he's done in the Pitts administration. I think this is going to happen for the very reason you cited. I think both parties want it. And I think because of that, you're going to get an answer by the end of the year, and we'll move forward. And I found that to be an interesting coalition of folks that was in the building.
Well,
the Hospital Association and the AARP are not always on the same page, and to have them both there saying we want the feds to agree to this was pretty impressive to me.
Well, the Hospital Association is really the key to this,
yeah,
because they've agreed to pay a new assessment in order to make it happen. But there were an awful lot of Mike Pence opponents or former Mike Pence opponents there.
It was
there.
An interesting mix.
Yeah.
To answer the question that he sort of neglected, Obamacare is not going to be repealed because it's working. And
it's working. It is? Really?
Yeah, it is. It's working in the states that fully implemented.
I don't know, Dan. You better find some cover on that one.
Will the November election?
The number of insurers jumping into the Indiana market is doubling
getting them insured and having the system work are two completely different things. That's
in the states that have fully implemented it, it is working.
You're saying it's working. Okay.
November elections?
It's not going to get repealed.
Yeah.
The November elections nevertheless have a bearing on how this turns out?
You mean the Indiana situation?
Yes.
Not directly. It could be indirectly if the Republicans win the Senate and they follow through on their stated desire to take a look at repeal, then it could. But
as long as Barack Obama is president, it's not going to be repealed.
Right. I don't think it has a direct effect on Indiana.
Moving on. Indiana Congressman Larry Bouchon became a target of comedian Jon Stewart on The Daily Show this week.
Larry Bouchon is a serious man who delivered this message to Democrats and the president in a GOP address on Labor Day weekend.
Put aside politics and do what Americans do every day, and that's get to work.
But on The Daily Show, Jon Stewart used a committee exchange between Bouchon and White House science advisor John Holdren to make fun of the congressman for challenging new air quality regulations to address global warming.
That question has been asked and answered, saying no.
You should look at the scientific literature rather than the public comments.
Bouchon spokesman Nick McGee accused Stewart of, quote, cherry-picking quotes out of context to further the comedy narrative. This is what he was talking about.
Of all the climatologists whose career depends on the climate changing to keep themselves publishing articles, yes, I could read that, but I don't believe it.
I do not believe the scientists because it is their profession, not their hobby.
Dan Parker, Bouchon spokesman, wants people to know that's not a news program. Do they need to be told?
Well, I think it needs to be stated that if you wake up in the morning and you've been mentioned on The Daily Show, that's not a good thing. I don't even know what to say other than, you know, if Larry Bouchon was living after 1492, would he still think that the world was flat?
Well, I mean, there was some evidence that he was ignoring scientific data, I suppose. But what he was doing was defending his district. There, coal is a big deal.
Absolutely. Not just in his district, for the entire state of Indiana. The coal industry.
But it's a bigger deal in the 8th district.
And a bigger deal in the 8th district. And that's exactly what he was doing. And I might add that is also the same position that he takes against the Obama administration, who's trying to put the coal industry out of business, is the same one that maybe a potential candidate for governor, John Gregg, has taken in the last month. So there seems to be a lot of feeling.
You can stand up for your district and not be a climate
there's a
change
lot of
denier.
Feeling, there's a lot of feeling about the trying to stop the Obama administration from putting the coal industry out
Do
of
you
business.
Do you believe in climate change?
Do I believe in climate change? I have questions about climate change.
Okay.
But yeah, there are things called averages,
so
I froze my rear end off last winter. This is about coal.
No, this is about the fact that he denies science.
Obama administration was
he doesn't believe in science.
Well,
I don't see how you can be a medical doctor
that?
And not believe in
are
science.
Are you for putting the coal industry out
Let
of business?
I believe that there is climate
yeah.
change.
You
I am not going
you're
to
not
deny
back
coal.
To back to the Daily
yeah.
Show.
It's about coal industry.
This is about the fact that he doesn't believe in science.
Back to the Daily Show and Larry Bouchon. They did a pretty good job of making fun of Larry Bouchon, and Larry Bouchon didn't want to talk about it this week. His spokesman said he was focused on other things. They gave very serious responses to any inquiries. I mean, don't you need to show a little sense of humor in this circumstance?
I think that would probably be the wisest course of action. I mean, The Daily Show does this with a lot of people, and the people I think who've come out the best on the other side are the ones who kind of play along with it. I mean, Jon Stewart is the first to tell you he's not a news program, he's a comedy program. So if you play into that, you can come out looking better for it.
Yeah. Maybe, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was
going
to say,
ahead.
Maybe we could give him another shot and invite him to come to the gridiron in the spring.
On
March 3rd, 2015.
Yeah. Okay. Which is a fundraiser for John's organization, if you didn't know.
Full disclosure.
What's this do to Larry Bouchon's reputation? Is it
well, if he comes
anything?
To the gridiron on March 3rd, he'll find out.
Right.
No, I don't think it makes a difference. And in fact, given his district and the situation there, it probably helps him.
Do you think it helps him?
Absolutely.
In that district? Sure.
So even though you question his position, you agree that it helps him politically?
I question that a medical doctor questions science. You know.
But on the issue of the coal industry,
on the
and
issue
protecting
of his district,
the coal industry, yeah,
help
it helps him.
There you go. Finally, a Carmel woman has a new business that is attracting attention. She's a professional cuddler. Lisa Kelly calls herself a cuddle therapist. She says her cuddling service, Indie Cuddles, provides therapy for clients in sessions lasting from 30 minutes to an hour. She says she uses light conversation and gentle touch to help clients unwind.
We barely touch each other at all as Americans. So it's not out of the norm. It's just that our culture hasn't really picked up on the power of touch just yet.
Mike McDaniel, do you think that's a bipartisan service?
so many ways I can go with this. I will just say that I don't think there's going to be a big audience for this, because I could see me saying to my wife, I'll be back in a couple hours, honey. I'm going to Carmel to get some cuddle therapy. That would not fly at my household, no. So I don't know. But that was cuddling they were doing there?
That's what they call it.
They got a different definition than I have.
Just in general, who do you think needs to be cuddled more, Republicans or Democrats?
Yeah, that is a bipartisan thing.
I think in this state it's the Democrats, don't you think?
That's Indiana Week in Review.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, hugs afterwards. Republican Mike McDaniel, Brandon Smith, State House reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.